Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode of Nintendo Voice Chat is brought to you by Gamefly. Gamefly is a way to buy and rent all your favorite games while saving money. Go to Gamefly.com, pick your favorite games, and have them mailed directly to your door. Go to Gamefly.com/NVC and start your free premium 30-day trial today. Nintendo!
Nintendo Voice Chat. I'm Jose Otero. This is IGN's Nintendo Show, and coming up on Nintendo Voice Chat, we're talking about the games we're playing. We are talking about new Nintendo 2DS XL, its announcement, and what it might mean for the future. And we are also discussing a bunch of news of the week, including the Zelda Breath of the Wild DLC details we got, and Fire Emblem's $44.99 season pass, which there's a lot to talk about there. Joining me this week, we have Zach Ryan.
Hey.
We have Damian Hatfield.
Scoop, just Damon.
And we have Per Schneider.
We can talk.
And if you're unfamiliar with that intro, where can they learn a little more about
that? Catchphrase.
Quite the intro. Quite the catchphrase.
Where can they learn more a little more about Scoop?
Yeah.
What about Game Scoop?
There you go, which is a weekly show on IGN that you should check out. A bit of housekeeping, though, talking about that. Really quickly, remember that you can watch NVC on IGN.com. You can also subscribe to us on YouTube.com/NintendoVoiceChat. And finally, you can leave us a review or even send us an email, NVC@IGN.com. We'd love to hear from you. So it is Star Wars Day, the day of this recording, and I have to ask the question to this panel, what's the best Star Wars game to appear on a Nintendo console or handheld? We are open to different answers here. There isn't just one to rule them all.
I mean, thinking about it, you had like
just
the Super
one.
Star Wars
just
saga. You
one.
Had the, I'm just trying to think, there's okay. Rogue Squadrons, Lego yeah. Star Wars. It is Rogue Leader.
Rogue Leader.
Rogue Leader, because first of all, Rogue Squadron obviously was amazing, you know, just having a game like that on the old N64. But once you got to the GameCube era, suddenly the Death Star Trench Run looked like the movie. And I thought, like, for the very first time, it felt like the ship models, everything actually looked like the movies.
Okay.
I love that one.
Fair enough. Damon?
Obviously, it's Yoda Stories.
Oh. For the Game Boy?
Wait, oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, duh.
Oh, game's so bad.
That was a joke answer. I guess I agree with you that it's Rogue Leader's my favorite. That's the one for GameCube, then?
Because yep.
I always get that confused with Rogue yeah. Squadron, yeah. Yeah, I got that right when I got my GameCube, and I spent all of like that holiday break playing through the game with my cousin. Yeah, that's definitely my favorite Star Wars game on a Nintendo platform.
Got it.
Time has not been kind to my choice, but when it came out, Shadows of the Empire was by far and away my favorite Star Wars game ever.
Okay.
And that opening Hoth level, top
still
notch.
The best Hoth still controls best.
Really cool. Top notch, yeah. Great it, level.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the best. My favorite is maybe an odd choice to some, but I would say that Episode 1 Pod Racer is
ooh, that was a good
the
one.
Best moment.
Yeah, this is pod
from,
racing.
Yeah, from The Phantom Menace, which was a movie that you either liked or slept through.
The best moment.
Ben-Hur sequence was the thing to watch, right? The big chariot race. And it was awesome. So you got to play that in video game form. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Did yeah. you have to? Did it require the expansion pack on the 64? Do you remember?
They all used like Rogue Squadron 2. You yeah. could use yeah. the expansion pack.
Did you ever play it in the arcade in the big pod?
I couldn't.
So
I was, I'm too tall, man. Like, I don't fit at the time. I don't think I fit at the time. All right, let's talk about, so this is round one of our show, and we're going to be talking about the games that we've been playing. The list is very diverse. We've got Mario Kart 8, some thoughts to share there on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Tumbleseed, I got a chance to play Hey Pikmin, Ever Oasis is on here. We got lots to talk about, so let's kick it off with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I'm curious to hear, Zach and Damon, your thoughts. I'm assuming that you're playing.
Yeah, I am.
Mm-hmm. I've been playing Mario Kart 8 like it's going out of style. Like, I've been playing it so much, and like kind of an embarrassing amount, which is silly because I owned Mario Kart 8 on Wii U and I played it a lot there, but the same thing that happened then is happening now in terms of like how people are playing it in the office. Every day at 5:15, somebody's like, pick up your sticks, it's time to race.
Oh,
yeah. And so there's always a group that, you know, will huddle up and play Mario Kart 8. But beyond that, I've been playing it at home. I've been playing it on the road. I played it on the bus the other day. I got some funny looks, but
yeah, the guy, I was recently on the plane to New York, and the guy sitting next to me didn't want to look like he was watching, but
he was
I
watching.
Know he was watching.
See, the thing about me
place.
And Mario Kart 8 is as long as if I'm playing Mario Kart 8, you're almost guaranteed a string of profanity.
Oh, yeah.
Just so much swearing. And so I was just on the bus, just dropping F-bombs and just being loud and probably obnoxious. So I apologize to all those that rode the bus with me that day. But
every time when you're in first or second and then it's just
without a doubt.
Shell, you get stopped. Then yeah. some like
lightning
clueless
bolt,
guy
squid.
Accidentally bumps into you with like his spinning turtle shells.
Terrible.
And then suddenly you're eighth and then something else like
yeah.
you get like shrunk. I just, even when the kids are in the room, I can't hold back.
Kotaku ran a video yesterday. It's about 40 seconds long, and it was somebody playing online competitively as I think it was, he was playing as Daisy, and yeah, and he was in first place,
12, right?
Way out ahead of everybody, and just got worked in the yeah. span of 30 seconds, and then dropped all the way back to last place. And I felt for the guy. It was so disappointing.
Yeah. Damon, how's your racing going?
Yeah, I was playing. I was actually playing with my wife last night, and like you said, yeah, she was cursing up a storm. She gets real mean.
Yeah,
it's normal. Though.
It brings out the worst in people.
But unfortunately, my Switch, I only have the two Joy-Con controllers. May I see one of the Joy-Con?
Oh yeah, sure. Go
right
for
here.
It. Yep.
This is just the absolute worst way to play Mario Kart 8. I think so. We're just like each have one little Joy-Con controller, and after a few rounds, our fingers are all cramped up and sore. So tonight on the way home. home stopping by Best Buy to get two Pro controllers.
There you go.
That's nice. The way. I haven't even tried it with a Joy-Con sideways. I should do that.
Yeah, we did it in the office briefly, but yeah. It's one of those cases where, like, it'll get the job done,
yeah,
but
pinch,
after like three or four races.
At home, comfortably sitting on your couch.
Are you playing with the attachment on top, the extender?
Yeah, no.
The strap is a lot better.
Yeah. Supposedly that makes it a lot more palatable. But
the weird thing is when you do local link up play and you try to have two players on one screen, you can use two Pro controllers, but you can't use two of these. You can't use the two Joy-Con together with the grip as a secondary controller. You can only use one turned on its side. I think it's because they want to prevent having two Bluetooth connections in addition to the one they already have on one console, and then the netcode and everything on it.
Yeah,
that's
irrational.
Local.
That's sort of
but
a rationalization.
I've just, my daughter has the game as well, so we've done just local link up, and it works great. But online, every night I jump on, then my daughter jumps on, and she tries to get into the same room as I am. So you can just go to your, when you're online, you can go to your friends list, and you can join a player as long as there's room. Sometimes the netcode is a little weird, like, I'm in a group and there are only six other players and she can't join. It says it's full.
Yeah.
And so we've run into that. And then the only other weird thing that I keep running into is it randomly selects whether you're 100cc or 150cc.
Yeah.
And like, depending on the day, sometimes I get like eight races in a row 100cc and I'm like, why? What is it tied to?
Yeah, it makes you wonder if it's tied to a rating of some kind. But still, like, if you're starting out, you would hope that you're racing at 150.
Yep. And yesterday I got almost all 150cc, so it's definitely there's some randomization or kind of linking to levels going on. So, but overall, man, I didn't think I was going to play that game this much after having played so much of the Wii U version and the DLC. It's just like they pulled me right back in, like I'm playing every night.
Well, and it's especially interesting because I feel like I thought that the drive behind playing so much of it on Wii U was to unlock everything, you know, like unlocking characters, unlocking different courses and stuff like that. But here, with almost everything unlocked except for the kart parts, I still feel that same obsessive need to go through and get first place in every race, in every cup. And I'm really working my way through. I did 50 and 100, and now I'm working my way through 150cc, and it's not easy to do a first place finish in four races in a row.
Yeah.
But
I would prefer a little bit more to unlock. I think.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I like working through that.
It's just a gold Mario. Yeah. As I've explored the single player though, I did notice, you know, the tweaks. Like, they've changed the performance of the car parts. The third drift you get now, if you drift for a long time, you get that pink boost,
purple,
right?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, that purple.
It could be pink.
It's a light purple.
It's a purple.
and then of course in multiplayer, like the ability to turn 180 degrees around, like there are all these little tweaks that are very smart, but you don't immediately
notice. It's interesting
notice.
To hear you all racing so much. Like, I was hoping to hear more battle mode
stories. Isn't that
stories,
crazy?
Which,
I'm into it.
I figured that would be the thing that grabbed
you,
off
have
of
you
it.
Never been into it, or you just don't
never
like
been into it? Like, having played just an exorbitant amount on 64, like, I just, battle mode was never my thing. I always preferred racing.
Sure. We do four-player battle mode. Yeah. So, like, with my family, we play it. But online, I haven't really played that much. I don't know why.
I played a few.
I played our tournament.
Yeah,
so
which I was going to bring up.
Now, are the pink sparks in addition to this?
Yes.
The pink sparks didn't exist in the Wii U version.
So, the long, like, you know, like, in the Yoshi course, for example, you can do that really long drift around the corner onto the bridge. You'll always get that boost now. Mm-hmm. And so, if you were good at drifting and you learned it in the Wii U version, it really pays off now with a bigger boost.
Yeah.
Speaking of our tournaments, I just want to throw out some quick shout outs. Congratulations to user hacker alias Cephas and Tyler, who tied for first place with 174 points in the IGN Mushroom Cup, which is a tournament you can find on IGN, on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. And also shout outs to Ryan and apparently username Whitey, who tied for third, and Charlie G, who took fifth place.
Gatson? That's Charlie Gatson. Yeah, I played with him yesterday.
Finally, a victory for Whitey.
Finally. Yeah, in Mario Kart at that. If you want to race in the IGN Mushroom Cup, search for the following tournament ID. It is 0642. This is not bingo, I swear. 1827-5371. This tournament runs from Friday 9 p.m. to Sunday 9 p.m. It's a 12-round race. We're also tweaking IGN's battle challenge. It's going from 12 rounds to 6 rounds because Pear made the good point that it feels like a lot of the same thing. It's a classic balloon battle. But the winners of last week's, Charlie G got first place. Second place was Cool C. Third was Aaron. Fourth was John. And fifth was Boiler Up, which I have no idea where you got that name
Whitey,
from.
Whitey, nowhere to be found.
Yeah. And that tournament you can find at 0744-1882. 800-392-2699 if you want to join us. And we have a podcast exclusive tournament for y'all, an invitational, the NVC GTT Invitational. You want to tell them what the GTT stands for?
Get the thing?
Yes, that's a thing on the show.
Wow.
And so you're going to join us for some ultra competitive matches in Shine Thief. So this is Saturday.
Yes, the Thief.
From 1 p.m. Pacific time to Monday at 1 a.m. Pacific time. And the code for that is 32439717841.
And once you've added the number in the tournament section, you can add them. You have them added to favorites. So every week you can just go in and compete again and the scores will be reset.
Yeah, right on.
Weekly.
And, you know, cool. I was on Saturday and Sunday. I did the two challenges and bumped into a lot of NVC listeners. And you can always see, like, when the room just erupts in welcomes.
Yeah, I noticed that, too. I played Friday night and awesome. Got the same thing. Thank you for playing, though, if you have played in tournament. If you haven't, consider signing up. So next we have Tumbleseed Impressions. Per and I have been playing. I'm not sure if either of you have picked up, but feel free to ask a lot of questions
here. I've heard good things.
Yeah.
You still have smiles on your faces, so you probably didn't play
I played
it.
A couple of levels at a preview event that Jose and I went to a couple months ago, maybe. Yeah.
So this game's really hard.
Really hard.
It's one of the most
difficult
video games I think I've ever played, and it is in the roguelike genre, which if you're familiar with that, that is more or less a genre where you die over and over and don't get to keep your progress, essentially. Like, you may learn some new skills, you may pick up a few powers on the way, but overall, it is a fresh start each and every time.
It's one of my favorite genres, and when I learned that this game was in the roguelike genre, that's what got me interested in it.
Yeah, because it doesn't look like it. It looks more like a kind of like a skill game, like a irritating stick game
like
or something,
puzzler,
right? Because you're moving this line, this vine with your left and right sticks. There's no tilt control, even though it looks like a tilt game, to move the seed. But man,
up a mountain,
and like I moved that seat up a mountain a lot, and came down from the mountain a lot as well. I gotta say, man, I feel like I've come to this point where I think this game is not for me, and like I appreciate the design choices, the look, the concept behind it. It's a fun world. They have these really kind of cool and clever power ups, but. That game is so brutal where, like, I kept on playing. Even though I was getting killed, I kept on saying, like, okay, I'm doing something wrong.
So I want to talk about...
I need to build up my hearts. Yeah. And then inevitably, like, something nasty would kill me.
Well, and I want to talk about what makes it so challenging. I mean, the idea is you're trying to push the seat up a mountain, and there are patterns of holes basically in the background that you want to try and avoid because you can just fall right
through.
But then there are also enemies flying around. So, like, there's this big, like, mother bird that she'll just follow you for part of the
Mothra.
Time. She's like this big Mothra-like thing.
Into that.
I'm listening.
Go on. There are a lot of different enemy types, and the idea is that obviously all of it's been randomized, and you are trying to navigate safely past by these diamond-shaped patches, because when you get to them, you can either plant a checkpoint flag so that you can continue to go up the mountain, or you can basically invest crystals you need in order to power up some of your other abilities, or finally there's hearts, which you can basically farm additional hearts that way, because combat is very non-traditional in this game. Now, where it gets a little infuriating is that some of the power-ups that you pick up that you would think, oh, this is a weapon, I got this. This is great. Like, let's say it's a mine or something. I might be making that up. I'm not sure. There's a lot of random powers I haven't seen. But if you are near it when it goes off, you can be hit by it.
Oh,
so not just are you getting hit by the enemies, are you potentially falling through holes?
You're also
getting
hurting yourself.
By yourself. And it's like, at what point do I break?
I was really high up the mountain for my standards, which is not high up for normal humans, like 2 feet. And I found this power up, and I traded some. I think I traded two to get it. Oh, maybe it was a different place.
You can trade powers away to get another.
And
power
I'm like,
up.
Man, it's a ghost. I want a ghost. And it's like a ghost who will take out your enemies. I'm like, that's what I need. I have like one heart left. I get the ghost. I go out. Ghost kills me. Game over.
So,
and I'm like, no, like it didn't say that it couldn't kill me too. Like, okay, maybe it will help you, but it will also kill you.
The joy of roguelikes, part of it to me, like I like Binding of Isaac a lot, and there is the unknown. There is the, I don't know what this power up does, but I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to hope that something comes out of it. I agree with you that the penalties can sometimes be a little too harsh. I played like 2 hours of this game back to back in a hotel room this past week because I picked it up for a few minutes. And I was like, I'm just going to do a few minutes. I just want to see if I make some luck. And I got the furthest I've ever gotten up the mountain before. I got through two a section and almost the second section. There are four in total. And I just figured, I'm getting better at this, finally. It took like 5 hours, but right. I'm getting better at this. And I think I'm going to continue to come back to it. But anyone who is interested in buying it, I have to warn you, you're going to get mad. Like, it's just part of what this game is.
You better be good at it. Yeah. I'm going to keep on playing, too. But it is...
Have you played Spelunky or Rogue Legacy or Binding of Isaac, all those games?
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
It's meaner.
This is meaner than those games?
Wow. I think it's meaner.
Is it meaner than Darkest Dungeon?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't play that.
Yeah, I didn't play that one either, actually.
So, as a roguelike, you can recommend this game? I'm a little confused as to where you guys stand on whether or not...
I will. I do. I think he's done. Like, I can tell he's done.
He said he'd go back to it, yeah.
No, I don't know. I know that.
Look, it's like they're...
I know what that means.
My favorite game may be a racing game, and you don't care about racing games. I think it's like that. Not. It's like, I can appreciate the design and the skill and everything that went into this game, and I think there's a good game in there. It's just not... It's not for me.
But you know? Where does it rank in terms
frustration
of a Sisyphus simulator? Well, high or low?
That's what I was going to say. Like, it is definitely the Sisyphus simulator.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
I'm going to get up there. Yeah. Oh, I'm dead.
I don't know what that means.
You only get three.
You push
hearts.
A boulder up a mountain.
Oh, I see. I thought there was actually a game based on the Sisyphus struggle.
There we go. All right. There's your Greek references for the week. It is Greek, right? So next is Hey Pikmin, which I got to play at an event in New York. I really want to tackle any and all questions you guys have about this game.
Well, first of all, I mean, like, I saw it and... I didn't play it. I just saw footage, and it looks like a side scroller, more like a Yoshi's Woolly World, Yoshi's Story type game, which is so different from the Pikmin games.
That's the thing to me is just, does it work as a 2D side scroller? Does it feel like Pikmin? Because Pikmin fan, like, I have a very clear idea of what Pikmin looks and feels like to me, and I just find it maybe really hard to translate that into a 2D space.
Sure.
And last year, we got a game with Metroid in the title, however.
Yeah, but it was not necessarily a Metroid game.
Is this really a Pikmin game?
I think from a aesthetic perspective, it is a Pikmin game. From a gameplay perspective, it is not. It is along the lines of more of a Yoshi's Woolly World, I feel. I feel like it is a game very much aimed at a novice Pikmin player, someone who hasn't played those games, who is amused by the concept of what Pikmin are. And it does involve similar ideas, right? Like where you're picking up red Pikmin and you're throwing them at enemies, or you're finding yellow Pikmin or you're swapping between them. But there isn't the same strategy layer of what Pikmin games sort of become and are. For example, the restrictions are gone. Like you don't have a day-night timer like in the background, and you're sort of conscious of that. That's something that every Pikmin game does, and it's something that you have to think about. It always puts this cap on how long and how much time you have to explore.
Except for in the caves, But does it ask you to multitask like a Pikmin game? No. Where, like, you send one Pikmin off doing something and do something else
yes
at the same
and no,
time?
Because we only played 3 stages of this game. Okay. I got to play 1A, 1B, and 2A. And I feel like the sense that I got from them so far is that this game is easy. There is light multitasking involved. You'll, like, throw a Pikmin up to the top screen to grab something for you, or to try and basically bring down pieces that you need or treasure that you need. Because it is still that story of Olimar has crash-landed. He is, trying to repair his ship. Why did they give him a license, by the way?
Like, he's
like
the worst pilot of all time. Yeah.
His fifth time.
Yeah. It's probably good for that universe. Like, it's just people are not that good.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. The idea is...
Our universe.
It's like LA. Sorry, LA drivers.
Bulborbs and all those other things that like run around in that game, which I always thought was funny. But it has the charm of a Pikmin game because you have like very expressive Pikmin. You have these little in-game sort of cinematics that happen when you meet them for the first time, whether they're dodging enemies or whether they're sort of fleeing for their lives. Mm. There's a lot of humor based around sort of survival in this adorable yet savage world that these characters are in. And I think there's something to that. But I do see this as a play for younger players. I see this as some kids just will not... I think a lot of kids will not be able to play Pikmin. Like, it is just too complex of a game, considering how cute the character is. Because ultimately, that universe has all the cute aesthetics that would appeal to a younger audience, but it's wrapped around a tougher than average game, I would say. Real-time strategy is not easy.
So you said you played up to 2A.
Yeah.
Right? So that's what, maybe like 5 levels in?
No, they only let me play 3. Like, there was a bunch of levels.
No, but I'm saying, like, that's only so far into the game.
Oh, yeah, that's only like 6 or so into the game, and it felt too easy.
I was going to say, did you get any indication that the game would get more difficult, or that you'd see more of those mechanics, like, as the game more...
I think the missed opportunity they had is they didn't show show me if I was going to be bouncing between several types of Pikmin. Sure. Like, for example, balancing a party where I have like yellow and red Pikmin or rock Pikmin and blue Pikmin. I think you see that in the trailer, but for whatever reason, they didn't want us to.
I wish they would have showed you a later level.
That. Like, I think that was a bad call on their part to just stick us to the introductory stuff when I would say the skill level in the room was pretty varied. And you could always start with the introductory stuff, but don't leave us there, because then you leave us with no real way to recommend whether or not this game does get past that point. I think the humor works. I think the idea behind it, all the touch-based controls are pretty cool. Anytime something's on the top screen,
is it only touch-based?
It's only touch-based.
Okay, so more like the Zelda DS games, like the
no, because you're still moving with the analog.
Okay, so
that's the only control method you use outside of tapping.
Okay, so you control your character with the analog stick, and then all the other actions are all touchscreen.
Yeah, everything else is tapping on the touchscreen, and you just have to put a little more thought into the stuff that's off screen. There's a lot of sort of, how do I get there? What do I need to do? Like, there was one specific point where I had to throw a Pikmin over an obstacle. And the thing was, it's kind of like Mario Run, where if the Pikmin lands on top of the obstacle, he runs back to me. Like, it always goes in one direction. Yeah. So you have to get the throw just right and toss it over. Didn't see enough nuance, didn't see a battle necessarily, but still think that if I wanted my niece to play this a Pikmin game for the first time, I'd get her this game.
Sure.
I felt like this was along the lines of acceptable for her. I just don't think it's the next great Pikmin game for us, for the folks who really are hungry for that Pikmin 5, or if this counts even as Pikmin 5. We're waiting for 6.
Pikmin 4?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I guess Pikmin 4. Yeah.
Well, that's...
I assume this was 4, then. Yeah. But yeah, it's Hey Pikmin, which also I don't... No indication why the name is also Hey Pikmin.
I thought maybe there'd be some sort of like integration with the microphone where, you could like yell at your Pikmin.
I think that franchise is dead. I think, Hey, there was a game called Hey You Pikachu with a giant yellow mic. That's gone and forgotten.
Yeah.
What about Seaman?
I haven't forgotten.
Seaman is also gone and forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried when I first started working at IGN. I had a Dreamcast set up at my desk. I tried to play Seaman at my desk, and I got a lot of weird looks from people.
Sure,
people weren't into that idea.
You still get it.
Last thing I do feel I should say is I was really pleased with the graphics. I was really pleased with
the
way the game looked. When I first saw this game, I thought you were just sort of wandering around, and the background was like this almost Microsoft clip art. It's not. There's actual like items buried back there, and you don't interact with any of it, but it still serves its purpose as delivering that ambiance and what the foreign planet should feel like. Like, life is so small, and nothing feels too small, at least on screen. And I got to do a level where I was swimming. That was the most different thing I got to do. The jetpack that you have, you can activate to reach higher ledges. Doesn't really take you up that far, and I didn't find too many puzzle examples where I needed it. Overall, like, so far all the signs just point to, you got a kid in the house who you think this is for, that's for them. I don't think it's for you.
Does it do the traditional kind of weird, quirky Pikmin music?
All of that. Yeah. All the production value is there.
You know how it goes.
The Pear Jukebox is fantastic. All right. Another game I got to play.
Do we know when it's coming?
Yeah, we do. It is July 28th, I believe. Same day as something else we're going to talk about in the show, but the new 2DS XL. They all launched the same day.
Sweet.
And there are other modes and features that I spotted with my eyes that I'm not allowed to talk about because I wasn't allowed to play them. So I think there's a little more to this game, and I think kids will like sort of the ant farm approach to what it is, because it does sort of look like a little ant farm on your 3DS, as it's happening across two screens. But I am not... Yeah, we'll have to wait and see how it pans out overall. So I also got to play Miitopia and Ever Oasis. Which one do you guys want to hear about first?
Miitopia.
Is Ever Oasis a sequel to Beyond Oasis?
I could not tell from what I played. Here's the thing. This was another case of criminally short demo. We were allowed to complete a side quest. Yes, it should be like there should be a citation involved when you invite folks out to a press event, and it is that short. I got to do a side quest in this game where I had to recover something for someone in the desert, went, fought a boss, got it back from, and in order to gain his allegiance, and the way the main mechanic of the game works is that you are basically building these civilizations. And I thought this part was really cool, actually. Once you get this guy the thing he wants, he volunteers to, if you'll open up his shop for him, he'll sell items for you that will ultimately give you more resources to make more shops and to sort of develop the community as a whole. So that part of it is cool. I did get him back the item that he needed. I think his name was Jesper. Every person you meet in the game has a little description under in the box on the bottom screen, which is sometimes very adorable. Like, I met this one girl girl where it's like, oh, her skin is magnificent. She must moisturize. And I'm just like, what am I reading? It was very strange. I forget what Jesper's thing was, but combat also is very straightforward. Yeah, also moisturizes. But combat is more along the lines of, believe it or not, it feels a lot like, this is maybe sacrilege some, but it feels a little bit like Ocarina of Time, like Majora's Mask, like just that lock-on camera-based you know, fighting system. There's a light attack and a heavy attack. There is no, and a dodge. There's no sprint, from what I can tell. So you're kind of running at one speed through the world.
But it's action-adventure.
It is action, yeah. You run out into these fields and you fight a lot of monsters. And what's funny about when you defeat them is, let's say, for example, you kill an intimidating snake. It will go from its large size to a very small baby size and then run away. So that's kind of like this game. Nothing dies in this game.
Like Sonic, when the little animals pop out.
Yeah, which I thought was really funny. But yeah, definitely, I feel like I didn't get to play enough or get enough context as to everything about it. Felt very light.
So Miitopia, though, you've been very excited about.
Love it. Love it so much.
Yeah, a little scary.
Love it so much, and know that for most hardcore players who don't like weird Nintendo, you are not going to like this game because this is not for you.
Define weird Nintendo.
Okay, weird Nintendo. Think Tomodachi Life.
I love Tomodachi Life.
An RPG, like a game with a goal and with an ending. I like to say that this game has a very Shakespearean premise in that all the world is an RPG stage, and all of your friends are the players, and it feels that way. Like, basically, the way this game unfolds is you make a party. The demo I played involved two players. They were both custom created. One was, I'm just going to name drop, but one was Doug Bowser, who is apparently like sales and marketing for Nintendo, and the other player was Reggie. And in order for players to bond, at the end of every day, you check into an inn. If I want Zach's character to bond with Damon's character, I would put you guys in the same room. Yeah. And over time, you guys would get accustomed with each other.
They did in the office. They gave us desks facing each other.
But what happens that's really funny is that, just like in Tomodachi Life, sometimes you check people's room and they'd have something to say. You see the dot, dot, dot above the room that it would be an indicator check in. You'd walk in on a scene and it'd be like Zach and Damon looking across from each other. And it'd be like, let's forge our bodies to be better for the RPG, like ahead.
Let's forge them.
And then, let's do sit-ups. And then they just start doing sit-ups, like, on the spot.
Damon and I are prone to doing sit-ups together. So
It's weird, and it's strange, and it's... So then you run out into the field, and the job classes are some traditional and some very non-traditional. So, for example, these characters were characterized as a knight and a cook. The cook beats everything to a bloody pulp with a pan, which I think is funny. Reggie was the cook, by the way. And if you take damage in the fight and you're sort of damaged enough, he can cook something on the spot and feed it to you. You're only allowed to control your main character. Every other party member does their own thing. I think you can influence their behaviors, but overall, they kind of fly on autopilot. And the interactions become really, really interesting the longer and the better the bond becomes. So let's say you two, Zach and Damon, have bonded. You've reached stage one. Now you want to impress each other in battle. So you'll see little notes like, Zach wants to impress Damon. And Zach just looks at Damon in battle. And then he runs over to the monster and he smashes it with a thing. And
there's tell me you like Godzilla. That would also
So what you're saying is, like, because it's Mii's, it becomes funny to see the interactions. Yeah. You feel more attached to the characters. It's like when we played Worms, we all named our characters after our family members. Sure. And it was sad when they went into the ocean and never came back.
So this is the Tomodachi Life team. This is their game. This is a game with those trappings, but something that has sort of an ending.
But more full-fledged RPG elements than like the Street Pass games, right? Where we used Mii's for all sorts of purposes. Or is it kind of light? Is it very light?
I think it's light, but it's still along the lines of what you know, for example, from what was the one, the RPG one that we used to play all the time? Was it Mii Battle? It was... I'm talking about the RPG that on 3DS you would just open up and check every day.
Oh, the battle one. Jesus.
I forgot. Yeah,
it's been too long.
We're all blanking. Yeah, it has been too long. Yeah. We don't Street Pass anymore. But it is along those lines. But it is still, there's party progression. There are abilities you gain over time. Like one silly one is that if people's HP are low, you can sprinkle HP flakes onto them, and you just take out a little shaker and like shake it over the people you want to heal. Your party goes up to four characters. You start with two, but more will get introduced as you go. You can have up to 8, I think, total, and just swap people in and out. There's this big hotel. Every night you stay at an inn and you sort of swap and pair and play around with the management side. What is funny is that if people don't get along and you're in the middle of a fight, they will fight each other. So if Zach and David, again, like, let's just say they're feuding, Zach will say, I think attack. Damon will say, no, I think defense. And then, blah, a fight we'll just fight breaks out right there in the moment. I think the premise of it is...
Zach is art imitating life.
Zach is bigger than me. I worried about that. But he also is recovering from surgery, so I have that advantage. Yeah. Maybe.
I can at least run away from him.
Yeah.
I do think that this is a really good game for sort of a preteen to teen market. I don't know if the hardcore Nintendo fan will care. Which I think is sad because I think there's enough amusing presentation to it that I enjoy it.
But if you're a fan of Tamagotchi Life, you'll be on this.
You got it. Yeah, this is absolutely along those lines.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Is Miitopia the name of the mobile app?
No, that's Miitomo. Well.
That's Miitomo.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, though, I'm glad you just said that, but the Mii Maker in this game will pull Miis from your system, will pull Miis from Tomodachi Life.
Oh, cool. So
if you've had that game before, you can pull folks you already created. Apparently, it also has custom parts that are not in any of the prior Mii Makers. They are specific to this game.
The game.
And the way I left this out, and I should have mentioned this from the start, but when you create your character, you then pick a personality for them, and a job for them. And there are some non-traditional roles that they weren't talking about just yet. But that's part of the sort of secret sauce that leads to the relationships that happen on field. My favorite moment is, so you can name any friend you want the villain. So let's say Pear is the big bad guy of this world. There's a cutscene where he confronts the hero and he's about to attack him. Then, oh wait, a shot out of the blue interrupts the fight. And one of the great sages appears. And then the game turns to you. So who's the great sage? And you're like, oh, who do I want to pick? And so
you
I put Anuma in that role. You cast him. You create him right there. He appears. He has some lines of dialogue. Cool. I think that aspect of it is really fun. You're basically this director sort of making this RPG happen.
Interesting.
Yes. And there's a lot of random elements to it.
So the Street Pass game was called Find Me.
Oh, yeah.
You guys were close.
Yeah, we were close. All right.
Too long ago.
Yeah, too long ago. All right. Just want to mention that Blaster Master Zero got an update to 1.2 that added some DLC. Apparently, you can play as Gunfall for free.
You played that, right?
I played a little bit of that, yeah.
Yeah, have you played since the update?
Not since the update. Okay. There's also a free demo out now, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that too. So you should check that out. And also,
you can play as Gunvolt?
Yeah, you can play as Gunvolt, awesome. And he has all his original powers,
that's
too.
So cool.
So you shoot something with the gun, and then you have to charge it off with electricity.
Did you ever play Gunvolt?
No.
I think you'd really like it.
As your striker.
Yeah. I think you would really like it as well. Next week, Minecraft Nintendo Switch Edition is out with the Super Mario Mashup Pack.
Nintendo Voice Chat is brought to you by Gamefly, the leading video game rental service with over 9,000 titles to choose from. Gamefly lets you try your favorite games and movies before you buy them and keep the games as long as you want, which you'll definitely need for a game like Zelda Breath of the Wild. There are no late fees and you can cancel anytime. You can even rent movies. Movies! A premium trial allows you to check out 2 games and or movies at a time. You can only get this offer by visiting Gamefly.com/NVC, so go sign up and start playing all your favorite games absolutely free for 30 days. That's Gamefly.com/NVC.
All right, so let's...
Real quick, I just want to say I have been playing a Nintendo game recently. Oh. For the first time since it was released, I've been revisiting Advance Wars.
Oh,
Game Boy?
Yeah, this is not my personal game.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, on Game Boy Advance. And man, because like I love...
Isn't it good?
I love strategy, tactics, RPGs, and I love Fire Emblem. There's been a lot of Fire Emblem recently, but I miss the like lightheartedness of...
We were talking about this yesterday. Like, Fire Emblem is fine. I've always been an Advance Wars guys, and I wish so badly that they would bring that franchise back. I'd like them to bring it back.
First one is still really, really good, really fun. Yeah.
Every one of them, even the Dower one, they're all so clever. Dual Strike. Such great games. Yeah. I love that it is like Fire Emblem, and I obviously love that franchise, but it has little differentiators where you don't have to worry about losing your units, for example, and all
that. Exactly.
We gotta get it back, man.
I don't know why Nintendo won't bring it back.
That or Metroid, which
we're selling too many.
Episode.
They're selling too many units of Fire Emblem. Yep. Why, like they don't need to saturate the market with 2 strategy RPGs when Fire Emblem is just selling out the door.
War is a popular thing right now.
Oh,
Yeah,
Wario
hey, with the stick world. Around. It might get a lot more popular.
Right. So there goes that.
Bring back Advance Wars.
Let's cut over to round two then and talk a little bit about the new Nintendo 2DS XL, which was announced last week. And I went hands on it, and we're going to get into that. But first, I do want to just point out we've gone over our initial reactions already. You can find that video on youtube.com/IGN or on youtube.com/NintendoWishChat. But I want to focus a little bit on the future here. So this is a 2DS XL, basically the internals of a new 3DS XL, but with 2DS branding, no 3D, an AC adapter included.
Hence
for $150. Right. Yeah, the branding scenario on 2DS, 3DS has always been a train wreck to me, but it has still thrived, still surpassing, 60 million units lifetime.
Yep.
But here's the thing. So you did a nice job.
I think it's more like 75 million.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, is it? I thought it was like closer to 66. But I do think that the focus here being that Nintendo, you know, dropping new hardware. Now, this was something you kind of called last week because we were talking about Nintendo Pair. I'm looking straight at you. Nintendo said on their financials they would sell 6 million more 3DSs. And you raise the question, how are you going to do that without new hardware?
Well, refresh it, yeah.
They went ahead and did.
They did it differently. I thought they would shrink. I thought they would present a smaller screen model just to make it look very different from the Switch. Mm-hmm. But they went lighter kind of on the price side.
Yep.
You know, which is obviously
totally
awesome.
Makes sense, yeah.
But, you know, so this seems aimed at the customer who either didn't get a 3DS or who is young and you want to get them something that isn't a $300 device. And I think that's a smart play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But how can this – what's Nintendo's plan long term? What do we think here this means for the future? So far, we know they've said – they will be publishing 3DS games in 2018 is one of the things they're saying.
Yeah. I mean, I have a viewpoint on it. They're making it very clear that there will be a kind of a cheaper way to play Nintendo games. There's also a free way to play Nintendo games on your mobile phone. And then there's the more expensive way to play it. And I think the setup now very closely mirrors the setup of the iPad, for example, where there are all these different tiers up to an iPad Pro, which is ginormous, and a smaller size version, and entry level, and all these different configurations. And I think they basically decided the market can handle it. They're not going to be confused by having the wedge-shaped 2DS and the more expensive 3DS.
Yeah,
and so they're presenting all these.
That doorstop shape, too.
Yeah.
So
they know.
$79.99.
Yeah. That's a true entry level for kids, right? Yeah. But I think where we'll shake out is that the Switch may get upgraded in a couple of years with a similarly priced, expensive model, maybe with more oomph in it. And I think they'll iterate on the DSs, and I do think they'll eventually go smaller.
But a big reason this 2DS, 3DS push will exist, too, is that Switch is not backwards compatible. It has nothing to do with your 3DS.
Yeah.
Which bugs me. Because I've moved on, I get going for a younger market, but I'd rather play everything on my Switch going forward. So
sure.
Hopefully later this year when they do announce their virtual console eShop for the Switch, I'd love to see a lot of these 3DS games as they're being released. Just, put them up, make them available for download on my Switch as well.
Have you gone back to 3DS since?
I have not picked it up since I got the Switch. No.
Yeah. I find it a little bit difficult. I find it kind of tough to go back to 3DS now. Yeah. I went back and finished Yoshi's Woolly World recently, and it was one of those things where it's I just sort of felt like a chore to kind of go back to that little system that I loved for so long, but now I have this thing. It's well...
Yeah, the portability factor just kind of makes you want to take the new hot thing on the road, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I had the same with Box Boy, where I was hoping... There's really no reason for a two-screen setup for that game, where it's there are a lot of DS, 3DS games where you kind of need that double screen, and you can't easily transfer it to this thing without some crazy creative solutions.
The hurdle, Damon,
right?
3DS software.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Sort of make it over. I will say, though, that they're making some careful choices here. When you think back, and I don't know if the thinking even was on their minds back when this happened, but look at Yoshi's Woolly World and how that got turned into a 3DS game. That could have been a Switch port.
Yeah.
They said, no, let's put that on 3DS because that is the kid market. That's the market we want to sort of reach.
Maybe that's a little too close for home, though, or too close to home, because it's one of the big criticisms against the Switch is that it's already sort of a port machine from Wii U, and that game, Yoshi's Woolly World, I feel like just came out a year or so ago.
It feels like it's roughly a year and a half, but
yeah.
I would say definitely. But I still think that they've been sort of drawing the line on choices and going, okay, well, where are we going to put which one? And something like Mario Kart 8 clearly makes sense as a Switch game. But I think that in order for this hardware to thrive, if you're really trying to sell 6 million units this year, you've got to have a killer game this year for 3DS. And it's no secret then that I feel that at E3, there will come a big announcement for something. There has to be. Last year's spike on 3DS in their financials was mostly driven by a little Pika Pika called Pikachu and Pokemon Sun and Moon.
Right.
Also, it was an anniversary year for Pokemon, so the brand had a ton of awareness. You had the virtual console games that came out early in the year. You had Go, which was one of the biggest social phenomenons that ever happened in a video game. And then you had Sun and Moon, which was a quality Pokemon upgrade. I almost wonder if there's a Pokemon game coming or something that we just don't have any clue to be thinking about.
I think you're right. I mean, I think this year will be capped by a Mario game, and Mario Kart and Mario are the two most powerful franchises that you can put on a Nintendo console, and Pokemon is the obvious answer, right? Like, full-fledged Pokemon game, maybe a little early, right? But
yeah.
But
unless
they
it's
will...
the third part of Sun and Moon,
yeah,
and
that's what
not
I was
a Switch game?
Yeah.
I just wonder, like, what is that?
We've heard that rumor so often that it wouldn't surprise me at all if it came to both, you know, like people want it so badly for the Switch, it would behoove Nintendo to put it there and on the 3DS.
Yeah. Well, and if it doesn't come for both, I think that's when the fans kind of riot in the streets, right? Because if Pokemon is that title, let's
not.
Just say
it's just a video game.
No, but
Squirtle!
Yeah, but there'll be the change.org petition within minutes, like we saw with Metroid, for example.
Sure.
Because some folks are really attached and want a Pokemon experience on Switch, even if it means a port experience.
Well, Pokemon like, Snap on Switch.
I'm not sure, yeah.
By the way, Jose, when you look at the 2DS XL,
yeah.
You know, obviously it's very close in design to a classic like 3DS XL, but the color scheme, they're really embracing those like bright neon colors, huh?
Yeah,
like the Switch.
Black, available in white and orange in like Europe and Japan.
But it's almost like Splatoon colors now. Like they really embrace this like crazy soda pop like.
Yeah, well, I mean, it reminds me of like the purple Game Boy Color. It reminds me of like, I feel like throughout the history, they've just gone for wild and weird sometimes. And you're like, man, there were 3DSs for example, that I think there was like a green and an orange that I was like, oh man, like I wish they were released in Japan, if I'm remembering right.
Remember when they put
orange GameCube too?
Yeah, I was gonna say, remember when they put a purple cube in your living room? That was bizarre.
Yeah,
but like these colors now are like they're bright.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just colorful.
Well, the funniest thing about like the colors
dark.
On the Switch, the funniest thing to me about the colors on the Switch is like I ordered the basic Switch unit, the gray, you know,
gray old man
like,
one. Yeah,
yeah, because that's the like to me, I was like, well, I want my console to look sleek. I want it to like feel like a piece of tech. But then I see these configurations.
Blend
and it's like,
in better than I.
Yeah,
do.
I guess so.
Are you laughing
like,
at us?
No, I want the double blue so bad.
Oh,
like,
double
that looks
blue
awesome.
Is great. Yeah.
Looks
but soon
cool.
There'll be yellow. We can do red
yellow. Joy-Con would be really cool. Yeah. I guess we'll end on that point with this part of the discussion. I think that E3 is going to be some major surprises. Hopefully, like obviously Switch already has a full schedule out and there are going to be surprises on that front. But do not be shocked if at E3 this year, Nintendo drops a bomb on 3DS that none of us saw coming because they're going to be aggressive for the holiday and push this 2DS brand. If they don't, then that's weird because you're refreshing hardware without killer software. That's strange to me. That just feels very un-Nintendo.
And there's no cheap gaming hardware in the market, right? Like at traditional games retailers, like the DS now, the 3DS line is going to be unique. There's no Vita. There's no, you know, nothing really in the market to distract from it. And so it's kind of like this cool gaming device you can get for your kids if they're not ready for an iPhone either.
Yep. All right. So let's move forward then. And talk about some news. We're going to kick things off with the details around Breath of the Wild, its first DLC pack. And there's a lot to talk about here. So we have the Trials of the Sword, which is apparently a way that you are going to complete and unlock the true power of the Master Sword by battling your way through 45 rooms where Link starts without any armor or weapons, and then you will build up from there.
So a little Eventide Island almost, huh?
Yeah, so let's go through pack by pack. Worth it, not worth it? What do you think of that mode so far based on what you heard?
Worth it. That
worth
sounds
it.
Super fun.
I like it, especially the
reward at the end?
The
true power of the Master Sword. What does that mean, Damon?
It's going to be permanently powered up.
Okay, yeah, 60, yeah, which is what I think it bumps up to when it's around something that's been touched by Ganon by default. Yeah. That actually happens in the game, but now it will be powered up at all times, or maybe even slightly more powerful.
So unbreakable sword, forever powered up. That's
does it make it the most powerful weapon in the game?
I didn't say unbreakable. I almost wonder if you'll still have that timer somehow. Maybe they will get rid of that, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think
if they don't, it completely throws the balance out of whack in that game.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see, because I feel like this DLC is for people who have already put in more than 100 hours, obviously, which is all, you know, most of us. I don't think you're quite there, are you?
I beat it. Oh, yeah. I don't know what my count was.
Got it.
Damon beat it in 37 minutes. Yeah. It was crazy.
So like, I was worried that this was going to be like a Trials cave where it's just like you go in, you got to beat all the enemies
succession.
Yeah. And it actually does the Eventide thing where it limits your access to the weapons and you have to really plan ahead. I really like that.
Yeah, really smart. And yeah, it was previously called Cave of Trials. So next we have Hard Mode, which, you know, the game is already difficult in its own right, but this one will rank up the enemies in the game. They're increased. So red bokoblins will change to blue, and players will encounter higher ranking enemies they couldn't find in normal play. Also, enemies will slowly recover health in battle, forcing you to defeat them quickly. Enemies are tougher to sneak up on. These are the patch notes, by the way. You're not going to get these on day one. Just so every time Nintendo updates Zelda, they don't like to tell you these things. And floating planks will be held aloft by balloons, and that'll be scattered around Hyrule.
So
I think this is the smartest part of it, but I don't think that this justifies being included in DLC. I'm a little against hard mode being part
too.
Of this DLC.
I don't like it at all.
Yeah. You wanted it to be an option right off the bat?
Either that or make it a free update. Like hard, like
just
charging for a difficulty setting? I'm really uncomfortable.
So the only thing I like about it, I'm with you, and for me it's kind of like, you know, I wish this had been available a little bit earlier, and presumably you can toggle this on and off?
Like, they have not made that clear if you have to start the game with it or if you're going to be able to toggle.
Dude, that would be whack.
Like, I don't want it to be gated behind me having to replay the entire game.
Yeah, no
right?
way.
Like, I would love it if it
I'd
was an
it.
Option.
I'd play the game over again, no problem.
Yeah, but you're a crazy person.
You're definitely crazy. But the floating planks thing sounds cool. So yeah. one of the things you do a lot in the game is use your glider, right?
You got snipers now to worry about as you're like flying through the areas and trying to get around Hyrule, which I think that was a smart play, and putting treasure up there too.
Can you shoot the balloons that hold them up?
Probably
so. I would assume so. Yeah.
Oh, come on, this is going to be fun for sure.
No, that part
I'll
will be great. I'm only a bummed that I don't feel like it is. It justifies why it needed to be a DLC inclusion.
As a guy who buys games with his own money, like, it bums me out. I agree with Damon that you have to pay extra for hard mode. But as a Dark Souls fan, like, I love the idea of making this game even tougher. Like, it was just hard enough till about the halfway point for me, and then it sort of started, yeah, like balancing out and kind of tapering off in difficulty. But yeah, I love the idea of like. Can you imagine running into a silver Lionel that recharges health? Like, no, thank you. That sounds impossible.
Yeah, or more of them even. Yeah. Like, just scattered around the world. No, I'm definitely going to play it. I only bring up that case, but I do think that it will be a lot of fun. We have Hero's Path mode, which basically help tracking your progress with the
brilliant.
Game. Yeah. So this is a really smart addition. It will track the last 200 hours of playtime.
Holy cow.
Basically documenting every step you take with a green path on the map.
Absolutely brilliant.
And I love that it's retroactive. So even though I've already beaten the game, all of my footsteps are going to show up if I would turn that on.
So those bastards, they were planning it all along. And like, I was, when you look at the map, like sometimes you get to this thing, you're like, oh, there's no, they were, like when I was still hunting for shrines, I'm like, there's no shrine in those mountains. Was I there already or not? All right, I'll go back and look. I'm like, oh, I've been here, right? Like, there's just a Hinox sleeping or something. But like, this is so cool because I bet even though some of us have 180, 160 hours, we'll look at the map and we'll see a place we've never been to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, it's a really
I think
smart
that's
addition.
Really cool.
Yeah, and it sounds like when we talked to those guys about sort of where this DLC came from, they did say there were features that just sort of hit them late in the development process, and rather than delay the game, they said no. This has to be one of those things. So worth it, yes?
100%.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so travel medallion. With the travel medallion, players can create a temporary new travel point on the map where they're currently standing, and basically you can transport yourself to that position at any time.
It's an uku.
Yeah, it's
an uku.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like you had in Zelda games, you had a power-up where you could like drop a point and then leave the dungeon, go get some health and come back, right? Like that's basically what it is.
Creepy, by the way.
Yeah, I didn't like those chicken boys.
Also that song.
Yeah.
I like the song.
It's weird for me that's DLC.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. It's like a convenience.
Why am I using this now? Mm-hmm. I guess maybe there'll be areas that if you're farming for something, you can drop one next to Lionel and then come back later when it respawns after Blood Moon, easily jump to it.
Yeah.
Or dragons. Or sometimes shrines are just a little bit too far from something you want to get to. Like, I think that could be part of it as well. Like,
I think
I'm abandoning this for now.
Farm friendly.
Later.
You know, getting all the freaking dragon scales and all that for your upgrades.
So worth it, not worth it?
Worth it.
I think it's worth it. It just should have been in the game, though.
I agree with Per.
Okay. Then you say not worth it. Like, it's worth it for the
Oh, not worth it. Not worth it.
There you go.
You're welcome.
Korok mask. So this is the next farming technique friendly thing. You'll be able to basically have a much easier time finding Korok locations. When equipped, the mask will shake, indicating that a Korok is hidden somewhere nearby. I wonder if it's shake as in like
Rumble?
HD Rumble? Like HD Rumble would be nice, but I mean, who knows? Because Zelda doesn't support that.
I think that's a great idea. You kind of shaking your head. I think this is perfect for DLC.
I just don't care about the Korok seeds. Like, well, the number 900 is so daunting that it's like, I don't care to collect.
I agree. That's why I like it, because when I beat the game, I only found like 25.
Wow.
So like, that's so it? Many more.
Well,
now
you played for 37 minutes. That's like pretty impressive.
That's a whole thing I can do now. I can just put on the mask and just run around and find
There's
all the
so
Koroks.
Many. I mean, you must be still stepping on Koroks at this point.
Our very own Sam Claiborne is on a mission to get all 900, and I think he's up.
Unassisted?
I think he's up to about 350. He told me, but he did say that when the Korok mask was finally a thing, that he would be wearing that constantly because, you know, it is a daunting task to find all those things.
If you want to cheat, Google Breath of the Wild IGN map. We have a map
that has a really great map.
The locations.
Yep.
But
so dense, though, it's almost hard to use because it's just so dense.
Especially on mobile, because you kept like.
No, you got to zoom in on that map.
So I think this is worth it. I'm not going to use it because I want to just find Korok seeds organically. I think I'm at 248 or
2. I just don't understand how you would ever find them without all of them without
People
using
did.
A guide or a Korok mask.
You just notice. You're like, oh, that's weird. Oh, I know what that is. And so there's like 6 different flavors of them too. So I feel like eventually you spot the warning sign like right
Roasted
away.
Korok seeds.
Yeah, there it is. Get your golden turd right now.
Stewed Korok seeds.
Yeah. Sam actually had a really funny anecdote. He said that he discovered a Korok puzzle the other day that he had never seen before.
I had one too.
It was something that he did that he was like, I must have passed 60 of those and not even realized that was a Korok puzzle. Now I got to go back and
That's
find all those.
That's my favorite kind, too, because then you're like, oh, I did that like how many times? I don't know. I enjoy it. Worth it or not worth it?
Worth it.
Worth it.
Yep. Yeah, good idea.
Okay. That doesn't sound like worth it. No, I'm kidding. It is.
No, it's cool. I'm not going to go for all 900. That's insane.
So 8 new pieces of equipment inspired by previous characters in the game series. There is a Tingle outfit. Oh, my
worth
God.
Worth it. Worth it.
There is a Midna outfit, Phantom outfit, and a Majora's Mask in the game. Sign me up. I'm there. And they said,
I wish
how many 8
so badly that it had launched with these costumes. Because if I could have played Breath of the Wild entirely as Tingle, I would have done it.
I hope when you walk, you get that tok, tok, tok.
Dunk,
that he gets those shoes are
there's
amazing.
There's so many great costumes in that game already.
Yeah.
You know, like some of the secret ones.
Plenty they're not talking
Nintendo
about
Switch
here.
T-shirt.
Yeah. Oh, I just really love the idea of like a really serious cutscene, and then the camera pans and it's just Tingle standing there. Like, that sounds great to me. Yeah.
See, that's how I played Final Fantasy 15. I had that stupid Moogle hat on whole time, and it's like really sad scenes. Yeah. So he's got like the freaking Moogle thing.
Yeah, the Korok seed thing too. I forgot to say this earlier, but it reminds me of the angel mask or the fairy mask in Majora's Mask.
Yep.
You sort of round up the fairies at each dungeon. That was a thing. All right. Overall, I thought that the information about this pack was interesting. The second DLC pack will get talked about later, and that's the more substantial
one. That's
the
real
thing. The dungeon. That's one with the story. But for anyone who has 100% this game, there's not a whole lot going on with this DLC pack.
Tingle costume.
Agree. Yeah. Not going to disagree there, but I feel like some comments, at least, that I saw online were a bit miffed about that. I do think, though, that's a weird expectation. I just felt like from the beginning, Pack 1 sounded inferior to Pack 2.
So for me,
Pack 2 is where you're getting the real stuff.
So for me, it's a little circumstantial as to what Pack 2 looks like, right? Because you couldn't buy just one or the other.
Yeah, you
it's an all-in
together.
Sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So if Pack 2 is 40 additional hours of Zelda or 20 different additional hours of Zelda, like 12 shrines so I can complete my hearts and, you know, X, Y, Z, then it totally justifies the purchase and it totally justifies the stuff that's in pack one to me because it's like, okay, well then I paid $20 for the second half of the expansion more so than the first.
I think that was the case for all from the beginning to me.
Yeah. To me, I mean, pack one, when you just look at all the features, it feels like you finished, but you haven't found everything pack. And it's like, I still have armor that I haven't upgraded because I need to farm like dragon parts, right? Like, and this pack makes all that either easier or harder depending on how you want to play. Yeah. I think that's really, really clever. This as a standalone, I would have been like, that should have just been in the game. But as kind of like a step towards a story pack, I think that's really cool.
If they were asking $20 for the big expansion and then $10 for this, like, there's no way you could have convinced me to pay $10 for that. Like,
sure.
Absolutely. Sorry. Just double checking schedule because I do have something conflicting coming up really soon. But
Jose triple booked Otero.
Yeah. Today at least. So Fire Emblem Echoes has a $45 DLC season pass.
How much is the game?
$39.99. Oh. So this is something we need to talk about. Yes. You can tell from the press release, Nintendo may be a little self-conscious about this.
They should be.
As they should be. They itemized everything to make it crystal clear for the most part what you're getting. And this specifically I feel is important because we're in an era where seasons passes get dropped left and right with empty promises and with nothing really getting said up front. So I give them props for at least going that far, but this is a lot of stuff and some folks, it is rubbing them the wrong way. So you have your season pass, which is May 19th with the release of the game, $44.99, 22 pieces of content overall. And according to Nintendo, if you buy the DLC this way, you will save more than 30% compared to purchasing all 22 pieces of content on their own. That said, this isn't like the Zelda deal where it's all in and you have to buy both in order to get access. They have several DLC packs here that I can go on talking about for a while, but I don't want to bore you guys. I will say that pack 5 is the most mysterious. There's just more information will come later, and there are two pieces of content in it. Everything else is new maps, new dungeon, new characters you could not play through the main course of the game, like characters you were never allowed to control before. It sets up an interesting question, though, of like, is this okay?
Well, the last Fire Emblem game, you could basically buy three times, right?
Yeah.
And at the time, we were kind of unsure what it was going to be like. And I'd say in hindsight, they were different experiences, but they were not wholly new experiences, right? It felt like you got a different take on the same path. And even though they were different, like, levels and kind of
characters
and setups, scenarios, I did feel like I was paying a little bit more than I should have for that full experience. With this one, I absolutely feel like I'm paying a little bit too much. And you can't even enjoy the fact that you're paying only $40 for what will probably be a really, really cool game, right? Compared to $60 games everywhere else. But it is also a remake. You know, this is a remake of a good Fire Emblem game.
That the West never got.
That we never got in the West, but you could definitely play in Japanese if you wanted to. But still, it's like they're double dipping on something. And then that, I don't know, it's just kind of, it rubs me the wrong way that it's that expensive to get an entire season of support content, and which is, you know, it's not all like new, completely new dungeons and stories. It's like little hero packs and stuff like that too.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier and like missing something like Advance Wars, right? I feel like as somebody that's of late, I feel like I've been suffering from Fire Emblem fatigue, and to have another Fire Emblem game with an additional $45 add-on, it's like, why? Like, why put this out when you could devote that time to something else? Like, we've already had 30 Fire Emblem games in the last couple of years. Like, chill out.
And I think there are going to be plenty of people who just buy Shadows of Valentia and don't buy the season pass. And I've done that, too, with prior Fire Emblems, where, like, with Awakening, they had a bunch of DLC, didn't sign up, didn't pay for it. With Fates, I didn't buy Revelations, but I bought the other path. Ended up not playing all of it, though. Yep. But I just feel like this is still optional content. This is still something that, as the consumer, this power is on you to send that message or not, whether or not you support it. I will say this does seem really ambitious, but in fairness, I have not played Shadows of Valentia. Like, I don't know how many hours it's going to take me to get through that game or how good I feel at the end.
It's not, I mean, like, it's going to be, if it has everything the original had, it's going to be a full-fledged package. It's not going to be a light experience. And, like, you know, there isn't a bad Fire Emblem game in the batch. Like, replaying this game, people are going to be really happy. It's different from if you only play it kind of like Awakening onward. It's different in that it has kind of different setups that you haven't seen before, like the kind of design of how you use your powers. And so I don't think anybody's going to be disappointed with the content that's in that game. And for $40, you're going to get a lot. No, it's just like this notion that it just kind of feels so like, it feels so money grabby to say, here's the full game and you can pay twice that and you're going to get all this content over time. And it's like, I kind of like, and if you don't buy the season pass, you're going to pay even more. Yeah. And like,
I don't know how I will feel after I finish this game whether I want all that. I don't know. Yeah. You have the power as a consumer to not buy it.
And you have the power, if you're listening, if you read through these notes and you feel like it's not worth your time, then don't buy it. Like, that's obviously the answer we're going to give you
right
here.
Right, then I won't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like it's a little different when you're buying like a new Call of Duty or Battlefield. You kind of have already a good idea of what you're getting, and you're like, you know what? I play those games for months. I want all the map packs. I want to lock them all in. Once in a while, though, you get a new game and you're not quite sure whether you'll be satisfied with the end or if you're like, you know what? I'm ready to move on to a different experience. And I think that applies here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there are definitely some story, at least if you're looking for more story, they're trying to offer that to you as well. So take that as you will.
It messes with my perception since I pay $40 for the main game.
Yeah.
Season passes, it costs more than the main game. So I'm like, what? Am I not getting full experience?
I feel like there have been other like guilty examples, right? Like the first mm-hmm. Battlefront, I thought was awful for that reason.
Yep.
Like the idea of like, hey, we're giving you limited maps, we're giving you limited weapons. Oh, by the way, here's all the other Star Wars content you want. Good luck with that. And I think it ended up costing more than the game too, maybe, or was around the same price.
I remember.
Yeah. The only thing why I'm not angrier about this is because this is new content that they're creating, right? It's not something they ported over from the original game and mm-hmm. and just left out of the reboot or the update. So, you know, they're working on additional content, they're tweaking that, and so you're paying for development time on that one.
I'd love to see what the final, like how many people have been buying from game to game the DLC for the past three Fire Emblems, this one included, clearly. Just because someone has to be justifying why they're spending so much money on this or trying to charge so much money on
it. And it's weird that they announced it. I just feel like they could have rolled these out one by one and kind of gauged consumers' interest rather than sticking you with a big bill at the front. You know, it just feels weird.
Maybe so.
Definitely signs of greedy Nintendo for sure. All right, well, there you have it, folks. That is our episode of Nintendo Voice Chat for this week. We made it through. And, of course, housekeeping reminder, you can watch this show on IGN.com. You can subscribe to Nintendo Voice Chat on YouTube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat. You can also email us feedback, NBC@IGN.com, or leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, you name it. There's a way to leave us a review and let us know what you think of the show. Finally, you can find our wonderful panelists on Twitter. You can find Zach Ryden at
Zachary SD.
You can find Damon Hatfield
at Dame Zero.
And he's also host of
Game Scoop,
which you can find on IGN.
IGN, YouTube, iTunes, weekly. It's like this, except we talk about PlayStation and Xbox also.
Yeah, you get everything.
And, PC, though.
No, well, when we have Dan Stapleton on.
Yeah.
There you go. And finally, you can find Per Schneider at...
You can find me at PerIGN on Twitter. You can also find me on the NVC tournaments on Saturday and Sunday, so look for me there.
And don't forget, the NVC GTT Invitational is all about it. Make sure you play that this weekend. And you can find me on Twitter, Jose_Otero. Thank you so much for watching and for listening. We'll be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
This is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.